Hey everybody, it's Club C again, and this time, Joe Myers talking with Jared Ewey, who does not have cancer.
No, well, not that I know of.
Oh, when's the last time you had a test?
I've never had a test. I'm in the 30-something age where I gotta start worrying about this and getting that horrible, do that treatment where you have to drink that milk stuff.
Barium.
So, I don't know.
Jared's mother had cancer and passed away. How long has it been?
It's been 5 years.
And Jared was her primary caregiver.
That's right.
And as a matter of fact, at the end, she was living with you.
Yep, she lived with us for almost 3 years.
And you two were an absolute dynamic duo, I thought.
Yeah. That's all that stuff you realize after she's dead. You're like, oh, God, we were perfect together.
We knew it at the time. Everyone knew it, even you.
Well, okay, yeah, but now you don't know what you got until it's gone. And I'm like, wait a second.
It was so admirable the way you were with her. And Jared even left his career to take care of his mother, which I thought was just, every time I saw him, I wanted to give him a bear hug, and I still do. Give me a hug.
And it's worth it just because of that.
Oh, what a sweet thing to do. All right, so if you are okay with this.
That's right.
I mean, you're not going to break down, are you?
No.
All right. I just want to make sure.
No. I mean,
because we do frank talk about this.
That's ratings right there. Guy cry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get you to cry.
Right.
No, let's talk about the kind of cancer your mom had.
Yeah, it was. It had a dark, if you could call it an evolution, maybe de-evolution. It started with, in 96, with meningioma tumors. Which, and if you say to someone who has cancer, you say meningioma, they're like, that ain't cancer. You know, that's not a glioblastoma. I mean, because it is a very easy to remove physical tumor. I mean, you go it out, it's like you imagine a tumor, you know, it's like a zit on your brain. And it was very big, and she had it taken out, and she had 10 craniotomies over her battle with it. But by the end, it had morphed into what her death certificate says is an astrocytoma.
Wow.
Which is you better go talk to God, because it was growing fast.
It keeps growing. It kept growing back, or yeah. They couldn't get it all.
Well, they kept saying they were getting it all, but you know, they'd leave one or two pesky little bastard cells behind, and they would come back. And the thing was, is that for several years, it would come back as these easy to pluck meningiomas. But at some point, my theory is this, I know everybody has theories, because really, and that's all there is out there as far as battling cancer, but
right.
Is that she had radiation at midway in the battle, and one nurse mentioned to me, she goes, you know what, I wonder if the radiation mutated some cells, and this sounds scientific and just like I'm some kind of conspiracy freak, but it really changed. Everything changed after the radiation. She did the radiation, and we thought we were done. There was dancing in the streets. You thought, okay, now you can go live your golden years. Now you can go be. But it did for a little bit, but then it came back and it was completely different. It was more aggressive. And then it was just, oh, hang on, mofo. We're going down.
Yeah. You felt like radiation changed the monster.
It seemed like it changed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it was like, oh, that's all you got.
The way you say things. I love the way you say things.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. It's
like you make me laugh at this. Don't make me laugh at your mother's demise.
Well, no, and I think we should. I think that's what my mom would want. I think I'm not one of these people who's like, your mother's watching you, because that's kind of weird and creepy. And some of the stuff I do, I don't need my mom in the room. But the...
None of us do.
Right, you know, I think that's what she'd want. I think she'd want to be... I'm going to be frank here. She'd want to be dissected. She'd want people to learn more. She'd want people to be frank about it, because she lived with it for so long.
How many years?
10 years.
Total, 10 years.
10 years of just absolute pedal to the metal treatment and or surgery and or we just got invited to some experimental thing. I remember getting giddy about the experimental things in the beginning, but then she ended up with scales and constant dry mouth. We're like, okay.
Mm.
But I mean, it was just... And when you live with that, what you discover, at least what I did on the outside, is like everything is BS. And you can't get serious about it. And you can't roll over and die. It's like you're caught in this crazy purgatory.
And people call you courageous. And did she feel particularly courageous?
No. She was like, I'm not courageous. I'm someone who just wants to live.
Yeah.
And when people would call her courageous, the other C, she would say, would you just expect me to die? Is that...
Exactly. Well, I had this conversation with a girlfriend last night.
Yeah.
She said, you're so courageous. And I said, no. I'm not courageous. No. I have been given a diagnosis of breast cancer. My prognosis is good. I'm just doing what I got to do to get through it.
Yeah, right.
It's temporary for me. And I'm sure your mother felt like it was temporary.
You always feel like it's temporary. And you just took it day by day. And you just, things would just fly up and you dealt with them like people do.
Jared told me at one point that his mom had this little trap door. What did you call it? Like a box lid in her head, where they would just go back in and stuff.
I mean, listen, just imagine how freaky this would be if you're hanging out with your mom and she sneezes and air blows out the top of her head. But we had been through so much together that it was actually quite comical, and I put it on videotape to send it to David Letterman. And that was really the only riff ever between us, because this is what happened. The surgeon messed up. A, she got an infection, so they had to remove the frontal skull plate.
Yeah.
So she had no forehead. And then when they stitched that all up, they left a hole in the top of her head. So she sneezes one day and her hair flips up in the air. And so then I get the video camera and I put a Kleenex on her head and she could make it float by holding her nose. But this is what you do, all right? This is what you do.
Yes, I know.
And so, I mean, when you're 30 and you left behind the radio career, which so stimulated you, and you're at home and your mom is everything, and that's not a problem. Mom, if you're out there, which I really don't think you are, because that's who I am. I actually poured you in my plants, so thank you for keeping the hydrangeas alive. But no, it was the greatest thing I ever did, but it became everything. And so when you're in this little huddle together, and the rest of the world can't permeate you anymore.
No.
And so you do this crazy stuff without caring. And so you make a video of your mom levitating a Kleenex on the top of her head to send to David Letterman. And the only riff we ever had is she wanted to be on Jane Pauley. Well, I wanted her to be on David Letterman. Jane Pauley was canceled, Mom. So
and Letterman was a much better host for this type of trick.
I think so. And so when we would tell other people about this, when people come to the house and I was like this giddy Dr. Frankenstein, they were freaked out.
And she was totally fine with it.
Oh, no. I mean, it was...
I sat with her one afternoon while you and Sarah did something. Yeah. And, you know, I'd known her, but I didn't know her that well. I really enjoyed her. I mean, I can't remember another person that I've ever known who was just so upbeat anyway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's always this... How could she get cancer and, Saddam Hussein not, or, you know, pick your evil character.
Right.
Because she was that kind of person. But I remember my mom saying, she goes, maybe I'm the perfect person to get this because, I don't know, I can be frank about it and I can show people that you can live.
Okay, look at me now. I'm the one who's crying.
I'm an easy crier, okay? I can't watch Rudy, that great football movie, that bong, whenever that little guy gets the sack and they carry him off the field.
So And you went through this experience with your mom. Did you go to support groups?
Support groups. They're just, you know, we did in the beginning, and I really felt like I was doing something. Because when you feel like you're losing all the time to cancer, you grab anything that makes you feel like you're doing something. And I think a lot of that leads to mistakes. I think that you just being there and just helping her live, or him, or whomever you're caring for, that's doing something, but it doesn't feel like it because every time you go to the doctor, there's some bad news and you feel like, I'm pointless, I'm useless, but you're not. And so in the beginning, I thought, let's go to these support groups. And
was she eager to do that?
Yeah, I mean, because she liked to get out, you know?
Yeah.
What I should have done is like, let's go to a roller rink. Let's hire you a male hooker. I mean, let's live life. You know? And that's really something
Your mom, I don't think she would have wanted that, but she would have laughed when they came the door.
But, you know, that's the stuff you start thinking about. You're like,
yeah.
You know, she was really young. She did this from 45 to 54, and she was young and beautiful, a lifeguard, a teacher, in shape. And you start thinking about that. I was like, Mom, don't you need to get some action? Like, come on, let's live outside the cancer. Let's go learn a limo and, you know, I don't know. How do you need to feel like a woman? Here you're stuck with your son all day. He was whining about his fizzling career.
Yeah, but you are one of the most fun people to be with, too.
Right. But, okay, so and back to the support group, I digress a little bit, but do something other than that. I mean,
Why do you say that? What was it about the support group that you didn't feel like it gave, in your particular situation with you and your mom? You go with your mother to support group. What happened there that was not...
It's like, okay, you're dealing with death all day long. Let's go hang out with some dying people. You know, let's, and you know,
and that's what people talked about.
That's what people talked about. And I, we did meet some very neat people through, for example, there's a great, Meningioma Mamas is a great support group, which really came in handy in the end. And they really helped us out. In the beginning, we would go to these hospital support groups and every week someone else was gone. One of the nurses that ran the organization got a brain tumor.
Good Lord.
And it was, and I was thinking, now, wait a second. If your entire life is already defined by cancer, because people don't even know how to talk to you without bringing it up, why are we taking our limited, our what very well could be limited time, mm-hmm. and going back to the hospital and hanging out with people you're going to see anyway in your next surgery? Like I said, we did found it in Meningioma Mamas because it was outside of that setting. It was... And it's run by a woman who really wants to live, you know, who's really, and so towards the end when we really didn't know what to do, where to go, that was very helpful.
Meningioma Mamas.
Yeah, Meningioma okay. Mamas. You could Google it, and I like how Google suggests probably what you, how you should have spelled it, so it might help be helpful. Yeah. But, and that was helpful, but you know what was better though? I mean, what was, it was just, you know, in your book, I learned a very important thing. Of course,
my book is called Good to Go.
God, you're such a pimp.
A guide for preparing for the end of life. But if you just say your book and somebody goes Joe Myers and misspells, they're going to get some kind of, you know.
Right, right. No, but, and I queued you up and put you on a tee so you could do that. But
Thank you.
You say, and I'm, you know what, I'm sounding like Richard Simmons. I'm a little too excited.
No, you don't sound like Richard Simmons at all.
I'm a little bit giddy. But in your book, you talk about a big mistake is not crying when you're saying goodbye. Don't you have to say that in your book? You should cry when you're mm-hmm. saying goodbye? I didn't feel like I should cry when I was talking to her when she was going.
You were a brave little soldier.
Right. Which you need to do. So so they can hear, oh God, you know. But my thing was, I knew she wasn't going to be comfortable unless she knew all the kids were well. And it was weird. She didn't go until all the kids were there and had somehow proven to them her that they were well. But that ties in with way before there's people gathering around the bed, way before all that, that you should do stuff you can't have ever fathomed you would do. You should go into debt because you're going to go into debt anyway with silly ass healthcare. Go to Mexico. I mean,
did you take a trip with her?
We
did
go
do that.
The last thing she ever saw before that one good eye went out mm-hmm. was the Caribbean.
Oh, Jared, how beautiful.
It was great. And we, you know, after that, we got back from Mexico and she hallucinated for 5 months. And I tell you, what a gift. I mean, she, my little tiny bungalow, she thought was a huge house. She thought she lived in a solarium with a workout room. And she thought there were kids everywhere. There were some darker hallucinations. She did think that there was a pit of fire by her bedroom.
Ooh.
Which became kind of a sticky situation when I had, when she was totally blind and I didn't know what to do, I had the Colorado Federation for the Blind come over, and it was a seeing woman who came with a very angry blind man who to help consult me, and this very angry blind man was totally ready for the seeing people to be, you know, just ignorant ass clowns. And so he, so we're all sitting in the living room, and he's like, so Anne, how are they treating you? And my mom says, just as casual as if she's talking about making tea, she says, well, it would be better if they didn't brick off the door to the bathroom and there are a bunch of bicycles stacked up outside of my bedroom. And the seeing guy looked at me like right through my soul. Here's this man. He's
like, how could you do this to your mother?
And so he grabs a stick and he just starts beating around the house. And my mom is grabs his hand and she's feeling the wall, takes him down there. While she's taking him down to her room, she goes, watch out for the pit of fire. And then she goes, you know, they make me pee in an earthen pot. And so there were some
Was messing with them.
Well, no, this is what she saw.
She was really believing
this is what she saw.
Oh,
I mean, one night we had a woman actually come over and care for her, and she tried to get her to go to the bathroom, but she wouldn't because my mom said that I'm not going to sit on a bicycle seat and go. She had this bicycle thing, and she believed when we ate, we were all sitting on bicycle seats. And she would say, Jared, I think, you know, the house is a little crazy, what you've done, but I think it's neat how we sit on bicycle seats.
And then how did you react to that? Was she angry with you for the bicycles?
No, I mean...
She was just accepting.
At first. I mean, the first illusion, she told my kind of chubby nephew that he should take off the elephant suit because it was unsightly. And we were all at dinner. Like, Mom, what? Wait, you know you're... You
was
know,
it the drugs or the tumor?
It was the... It is a rare condition where the tumor had cut off the blood supply to the vision, so her brain was providing images for her, and she thought she could see. So she would sit in the kitchen and look at the ceiling thinking she'd watch TV, and sometimes it'd be a scary movie that I'd have to turn off. Sometimes it was a great Western that she really enjoyed. There was a Tinkerbell in the house. Her father was alive. He died of cancer in the 70s. He was there. There was when I would give her baths, and I think that some other stimuli affected what she saw. So it was hot. It was a very hot summer, hot long summer, and I would give her a bath, and I'd have the window open, and she would hear cars, so she would think she was in the middle of the street. So she would sarcastically wave. She'd be like, "Hello, everybody. Sorry about how I'm naked, but my son insists on giving me a bath in here." It was crazy. So
what would you say to this? I'm knowing you didn't keep your mouth shut.
No, I would go along. I mean, in the beginning, I was kind of sarcastic. In the very beginning, I had no idea what to do. Especially when she was telling anybody who had ears that I was making her pee in an earthen pot. But then after...
Sorry. Don't make me laugh.
It's funny. And then she had all these children and all over the house. And my older brother, Peter, was a little boy to her again, which I thought was really fabulous. That she could go back to what was, a very hard time for her because she had a kid very young in high school. And it just wasn't acceptable. So she and my dad really had nothing. And they were trying to raise this kid. But she was able to go back with my brother and kind of spend those last few months with a little...
And feel like she was making it right.
Yeah, it was cool.
And it was different. Yeah. That is very cool.
It was great. I mean,
it's John, my husband John has often said that when he gets, you know, when he goes, he hopes that he's got enough wherewithal, or someone does, to put him in some kind of a virtual reality chair with a set of goggles on, and he's seeing things that are programmed in there.
Right.
Could this be kind of what was going on with your mother?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I took her, we were so doctor fatigued and we'd been everywhere. When you're taking care of somebody, it's okay to tell the doctor they don't know what they're doing. I learned that after some pretty severe overdoses and accidents. And, you know, we just deserted some people that she had put a lot of faith in. So it was a hard time, but we went to new doctors, we got new opinions. But by the time this was happening, we were pretty weary and, we got, you know, people, the doctors who were looking at her were kind of throwing their hands in the air, you know. And so with the vision thing, it was just internet study. And it was, we'd read about cases. And matter of fact, NPR, a couple years later, had a story on a guy who had gone blind, but was having these terrific hallucinations that he was lucid enough to talk about them knowing they were hallucinations. And I don't even remember the term for it, but we did discover it was a clear-cut case. The circulation was cut off, and the mind was just doing what it does.
It was a physical thing.
You know, and it's the weird thing. My mom was always that person who made things better. You know, if there was tension at the dinner table, she was offering people, you know, mashed potatoes, more mashed potatoes, you know. Anybody like a roll? Anybody like a dinner roll? And here her brain did her that favor. I mean, I'd try to brush her teeth, and she was certain I was using a magic marker and coloring them and that kind of thing. So there was some difficulty with that. But for the most part, it was kids, which she loved.
Uh-oh.
And I know. God, what is in the room? Did somebody cut an onion?
I'm having toxins poured into the...
Yeah.
Breathing.
No, but she, you know, her teaching career was cut short. And She spent the day handing out art supplies to a fairy that flew around and little children everywhere.
Jared, I never knew these things. I've known you a very long time. We've never sat down and really talked about it. I'm sorry I made you cry.
No, I'm not crying. What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. Sorry that...
I just held my breath for a while. Do I look red? No, I cry easily, and I'm trying to get it all down about my mom, so it's cool to talk about it. And
going to be reading it someday, I'm sure.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope you are writing.
I'm about to be unemployed here, and I want to take that time to piece all these hundreds of thousands of words together that she left me with. And,
Jared, what piece of advice or words of wisdom would you give someone who is a caregiver for a loved one who you know the end is coming soon? What would you say?
Yeah, I've kind of been all over the place, but I go back to this. Cry, make an ass out of yourself, spend money you don't have, because once they're gone, you can always earn money, but you won't have them back to spend it on. It doesn't have to be money, but just do crazy shit and make it count, because I think a lot of us have trouble being here now. We all know that. We're all distracted by iPhones and Facebook and all that. But when you're with them, be there. Do the stuff you need to do at night or whenever they're napping, whatever. And when they're awake, you don't have to be there all the time while they're awake. But if you're there 5 minutes, give it hell. And if that means that you have to talk through a wave of mucus and tears that's by damn going to get out and make you sound like you're weak, well, then do it. Stammer when you talk.
You mean show them how much you love them.
Show them how much you love them. And you know, people know that feeling that they're sitting there and they don't know what to say. Stop thinking. Just stop it and be.